while since we've talked about actual Satanists on Ask an Atheist, and at the time I called them dinner theater atheists, and maybe it was a little bit I don't know if I was making fun of them. I mean, it's a theater thing, and I like theater stuff just as much as that guy. Next guy, I'm in radio, right? So
maybe a little uncharitable.
Maybe a little uncharitable. And I guess this week you're all going to listen to me basically eat my foot right up to the kneecap. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. Joining me today, at least for the first segment, is Becky. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sam.
And showing up for the second time ever, I got Donald. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, we've got a really great interview. It's the first interview I've given most of the hour to in a while, but we've got some people to thank first off. We'd like to thank Movie Man from the internet, Angela from Australia, and the Humanists of North Puget Sound, who write, "The Humanists of North Puget Sound wishes for you to have air conditioning. Your show is too important to the region to be at any risk. This should cover half of a decent one for your space." All of these people have given to Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist by Peggy from Kent to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards keeping lights on. You can go to our website at askatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, and it'll take you right to our PayPal page. Yeah, it's summer.
It's warm. This is a very warm summer, but, you know, climate change is false. God promised not to flood the earth, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Slowly. Yes.
Okay, so every time, and Donald maybe can help me out on this one. Every time that snows somewhere out of season, they go, "Oh, so much for climate, so much for global warming." Is this actually a result of climate change, or is this just unseasonable weather?
Okay, so the growing trend right now that we're looking at is part of a continual ongoing trend, which is consistent with the prediction of climate change models. So it's not just that things are going to get warmer overall everywhere. It's when the air gets warmer, it has the capacity to be able to carry more water vapor, which also means that you're going to have, in some areas, more rain, more snow, more intense storms. And all of these are consistent with what we know of as climate change. So it's not that it's everywhere is suddenly hotter and going to continue to get hotter. No. Areas that are more prone to being dry are going to get more dry.
Right.
Areas that are prone to being more wet during certain seasons will have even more moisture during those seasons.
Well, Lake Taps is actually, nobody can go on it right now because the glacial melt was so bad this year.
There is basically zero snowpack in Mount Rainier, and we've had some really nice water conservation. They, you know, foresaw this in the wintertime, but we are in drought conditions in the Pacific Northwest up here, and ooh, do we feel it.
Yeah.
And that's not looking like it's going to be abating anytime soon.
So the cool news is that Jerry Brown did sign the vaccination law in or bill into law in California, so that's a good one.
Yay!
But I thought we might want to do something a little bit more fun. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal suggested the dissolution of the Supreme Court at a campaign event this week. The presidential long shot railed against the marriage equality decision, saying the Supreme Court was out of control and making laws on their own. He suggested, if we want to save some money, let's just get rid of the court. While many conservative presidential hopefuls have criticized the decision, no other candidate was willing to suggest disbanding the Supreme Court.
Of all the things you're going to say, even if it's tongue-in-cheek, sure, I don't think that you're stepping in the right direction there.
Bobby Jindal, no end of interesting things to say to us, I guess.
He really likes science and monitoring as it applies to perhaps his own state in terms of hurricanes, but he, you know, couldn't be bothered to do anything with regards to Pacific Northwest since he wanted to eliminate volcano monitoring.
Of course. And then here comes what he's actually suggesting is basically dismantling a third of the federal government as it is set up, because he didn't get his way?
Yeah, basically.
Or his voting base didn't get their way. I mean, when you have a decision by the Supreme Court that says this law is unjust and we need to be in accordance with our Constitution and our constitutional amendments and everything, you can't just say, hey, my conservative Christian voting base is against this, so I want to do away with, as you said, one third of our government.
Yeah. Not really familiar with the Constitution, Bobby. Not really familiar with much of anything, I think, Bobby Jindal. I mean, with the volcano thing.
I mean, I think most fourth graders understand the three branches of government. That's how we get all of those official state muffin bills.
Well, and this might be one of those things where this is the result of defunding education, I guess.
I guess. In Louisiana, where we've basically have no one that has standing to bring a suit in Louisiana against the teaching of creationism in science classes.
Yeah.
We have a past interviewee that's been on the show, Zach Copland, who's been advocating vociferously against this. But he's no longer a student, so he can't
no
bring
longer
a suit.
Has standing, yeah.
But there's tremendous evidence, just, you know, people saying, hey, this is our curriculum and we will teach creation and the Lord made everything that there is in the world. And it's going on in our public schools in Louisiana right now.
And in the case of Bobby Jindal, if you don't have it, you can't appreciate it. So ask an atheist, 844 skeptic. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's political but you know, Bobby Jindal has been very on point about religion and occasionally says weird dominionist things and is clearly not up on this whole science business. So I got no problem talking about him on this show.
Science business, government business.
He's not up on much, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm not hopeful for the things that come out of Louisiana in terms of those that deny climate change, want to defund, science in our, federal government. I mean, he's looking for a way to save money. The way to couple his prerogatives of saving money and doing away with the people that make a decision that's against the religion of his voter, base would be so ridiculous. I mean, at least when he was saying, let's save some dollars by cutting volcano monitoring, we can point to that and say that's a bad idea. But this together, let's cut the court in order to save money? That's just absurd.
Well, unless you're talking about saving money by cutting the entire judicial system, in which case then you don't also have to worry about the punishment system, so we're no longer spending money on prisons either.
Yeah.
Then you have other issues on top of that. So.
Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, now that sort of the party is kind of over and we've had our celebration and we're getting back to it, there's a lot of weird stuff happening in the fallout. Like, there's a lot of people in the Christian dominionist knob community basically asking for a constitutional amendment, which I don't think has any chance of succeeding at this point.
No, not at this point, I don't think. You also have the trend of more and more people saying, I wish that there were no government regulation of marriage whatsoever.
Well, we've had people say that on the show, and
yes.
At one time I said, hey, that I understand that you feel that way. How about we get equality and then we can attack this problem? Now's the time,
yeah.
I guess. There's already people talking about polyamory on the internet and stuff like that. And hey, I'm all for it. Why bother? If marriage is a social and religious construct, then it makes sense that maybe it shouldn't be in government.
I think it does. I think also a weird intersection of where religious people and free thinkers can sort of intersect is when you have support for family or living structures that are beneficial to humans. Religious people would take the angle that, a nuclear family with two parents. Many religious people say one man, one woman, but two parents, being able to raise a child, tremendous evidence of the beneficial, outcomes of that. But anything that supports a beneficial sort of living structure and existence, and if that means a triune marriage between three people, there's advocates for that, and there's starting to be studies,
yeah,
on those kinds of things. There's robust studies from Australia about two parent households where both parents happen to be of the same gender, that have basically debunked the idea that gay parents are a bad thing for families and children.
Oh, can we just get over that noise already?
I hope so.
Jeez.
So looking forward to more and more evidence about how when you have an acceptance of family structures, it generally leads to more success, fewer problems, more, better adjustment, better integration with our general society, everything.
Indeed. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to have a really fun interview with Lucian Greaves at the Satanic Temple.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Sam Olvey here.
And I'm Becky Friedman. After almost 4 years, our radio show Ask an Atheist returns to Seattle on KKNW 1150 AM on October 5th.
Join me and my rotating cast of atheists and freethinkers from around the world as we answer some of our favorite questions that we are totally not at all sick of.
Like whether atheists are even capable of feeling love or joy.
No.
Wait, what?
Catch Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey Sunday afternoon at 3 on KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle. Find them online at askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. We've been doing Ask an Atheist for about 5 years. One of the very first episode that I wrote for the show was about the 1980 Satanic Panic. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that I've often talked about Satanists and the whole Satanic thing and the benefits and the drawbacks. And I've been looking forward to this interview for some time. Joining us now is Lucian Greaves. He's the spokesman for the Satanic Temple, who has just filed a lawsuit against the state of Missouri. He has been in the public eye numerous times advocating for separation of church and state. How you doing, Lucian?
Very good. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. So, like I said before, I've kind of described what you guys have been doing in the media lately. Fantastic work is a little bit of trolling on the side of intelligence. Am I on the mark there?
You know, I have a little difficulty with the word trolling because I'm not sure exactly what people mean half the time when they say that. It's similar to the problems I have with the word pranksterism. I don't necessarily have anything against it. It just depends on whether people mean that we're doing these things just for the attention's sake of it, which it definitely isn't the case. We really have some serious issues we're confronting and that we truly do believe in. And we also do truly believe that you can separate religion from superstition and that what we're doing is legitimate to that end. But just the same, we do things that are attention-grabbing to draw attention to those issues. And you certainly can't throw Satanism out into the mix without provoking a plethora of responses, which we think we utilize that to our advantage. So depending on what you mean, we're definitely not pranksters or trolls, but if you mean something else, maybe we are.
Yeah, I have to admit, I guess I'm using sort of a Paleolithic version of the word trolling, where the idea is to get an idea across otherwise, you know, other than just direct debate, which I think you guys have done a really good job of that now and again. Yeah, I can see that. Internet.
Well, I'm glad to hear you bring up the Satanic Panic. If you look at some of the material I've written under my own name, Doug Mesner, on sites like process.org, I spent many years writing about the ongoing Satanic Panic put forward by organizations like the ISST, International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation, these kinds of fringe therapeutic organizations that still put these ideas of multiple personality disorder and satanic cult threats. And I'd write these very rather academic pieces about it, and I would do these exposés of these quack therapists who continue to purvey these notions, and nobody quite pays attention, but once I'm the spokesperson for the Satanic Temple, you know, now I'm doing interviews with the New York Times. And actually, Newsweek is running a piece pretty soon where I'm consulted as somebody they're talking to about the Satanic Panic. So, I, you know, even though this is some bombastic imagery and draws a lot of attention, I think I'm really doing my best to direct it in a very productive way.
And that brings me to my second question before we get into what we actually are going to talk about is, from what I understand, you guys are atheists, but there's sort of a theater. All right, I'll level with you. I called it dinner theater atheism once or twice.
Well, sure. I mean, we're very open about being atheists. So people often take that and run with it and claim that, well, then the Satanism is arbitrary. So, you know, that's just to piss off the Christians or something or something along those lines. But really, I grew up in the Satanic Panic, and I think a lot of people drawn to Satanism now did. And it's kind of, for some people, just the cultural weight of the idea of Satanism means something. It really contextualized their anti-supernaturalism. It's become symbolic of their kind of outsider status, and they're reconciling themselves to probably their religious upbringing and coming away from superstition and embracing blasphemy. It really does become kind of a cultural identity, and I think legitimate from a religious perspective as a non-supernaturalist, atheistic religion.
That's a very good point. It does provide sort of an identity in the atheism movement. I mean, that's actually, you know, where people are specifically talking about atheism and not identifying with anything else, finding a cultural identity is a problem.
The big mistake is to intertwine supernaturalism and religion the way religionists would like you to do, because if you're going to throw away religion, say your deeply held values cannot be a religion, cannot be considered a religion, you're foregoing the privileges and exemptions that are afforded to religions. And I think that's a major mistake. Given the legal status of religion, I think we must insist that our deeply held values can be contextualized as a religion without supernaturalism. And that's something worth fighting for.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the whole point of this interview, lawsuit that you have going up in the state of Missouri. Can you give us the background on this one?
Yeah, it was actually upward of about a year ago now that we first drew up an exemption form where we felt that due to the nature of the Satanic Temple's tenets, which maintain personal sovereignty is one of our highest virtues, and the pursuit of scientific evidence and towards the ends of making the best decisions available to us, that the informed consent materials being put forward in some states as mandatory before getting an abortion really violated our deeply held beliefs. And these informed consent materials shouldn't be confused with standard medical documents which just describe the known possible side effects of any of the medications or procedural aspects of the treatment or anything else. This is actual propaganda, and we're making the argument that it's religious propaganda, and it's meant to dissuade women from abortion or make them feel guilty about their decision. And you'll see such unfounded information in there, such as that you run a higher risk of breast cancer or suicide from having an abortion, unproven things like that. And specifically, they put forward the notion in the informed consent materials, in Missouri at least they do, that the non-viable fetus is a unique living individual and that you're terminating that life. The idea of when life begins, we feel, is absolutely a matter of religious opinion, and we're of the opinion that a non-viable fetus is tissue and it's subject to the will of the woman, whether she wants to terminate that pregnancy or not. The state has no place dictating that life begins at conception, which is what they're doing with the informed consent materials. Tied in with that is a 72-hour mandatory abortion waiting period. A woman has to go into Planned Parenthood, receive the informed consent materials, and then wait 72 hours for the procedure. The logic is that she needs to digest those materials, have the time to think it over, and all that kind of thing. But in Missouri, particularly where we're having the lawsuit, there's only one clinic where women can have an abortion. So a woman can travel quite a distance only to have to receive these materials and then wait 72 hours, which might make it prohibitive for some women to actually do that. You know, it travel twice, take that time off of work, pay for lodging, perhaps, whatever else. And it was only recently we had a woman actually try to use our informed consent waiver, because we drew up an exemption. We had it on our website. You can print it up as a PDF. And we encouraged women to go into the clinic and present that, and saying that they were therefore exempted from the informed consent materials and the 72 hours waiting period that ties in with that. And that's what she did. We're calling her Mary Doe. That's a pseudonym. We're trying to keep her anonymous, and I think the court has agreed to allow that. But we filed a federal lawsuit, or actually we filed a state lawsuit immediately after she was turned down. She went to the clinic, and the clinic said, as we expected, that state law prohibited them from honoring her exemption. So we filed the lawsuit immediately, naming the governor of Missouri and the attorney general as defendants. And just last week, we followed up and filed a federal lawsuit on First Amendment grounds. The state lawsuit leverages RFRA, Missouri's own Religious Freedom Restoration Act,
right,
which is really interesting. Now, we've seen some commentary in the press where people say, well, this has been tried and failed. You know, that actually religious groups have before tried to say that that abortion is their religious right, and it was found that they weren't sufficiently compelled by their religious belief to get an abortion. What people don't realize now, I think, is that the landscape has changed since things like Hobby Lobby. And I think, you know, now is the perfect time to bring these questions up. And it'll be really interesting to see this play out. I'm really excited. And we reached our goal. We were crowdfunding on Indiegogo for $30,000 for legal fees. And we've exceeded that now. And the fund drive is still going on. But we're willing to pursue this to as far as we can go. And either way the case goes, it's going to set some kind of precedent. Mm. And I can only think it's for the better.
Now, what went into your decision as an organization to name the attorney general and the governor in the lawsuit and not the actual clinic that denied this woman the services that she was requesting?
Well, the clinic was acting on the demands of the state. Obviously, Planned Parenthood doesn't want these kinds of restrictions in place. I have a feeling they were presented with that exemption, and they really couldn't do anything else but turn it down. So it's really the state's problem, and the state needs to answer to it. And you know, ultimately, that was our lawyer's decision to figure out who was the best to name in the suit, and that's where it landed.
Right. So the plaintiff, Mary, she printed off this exemption form from your website and tried to use it. Did you know that was going to happen? Had she contacted you beforehand, or did she contact you afterwards? Or how did this sort of relationship between you and her sort of develop?
Actually, she was a member of the Satanic Temple. I was not aware of her, but she was in contact with another member of the Satanic Temple, who then put her in contact with membership of our St. Louis chapter. And it was through intermediaries with the St. Louis chapter that I had any kind of correspondence with her at all. But I've intentionally kept a minimal knowledge about her, her background, her circumstance, even her real name, just in the case of depositions or other questions where maybe I don't want to know these things.
Right. Right. Well, and I think one of the more fascinating aspects of this case is you actually reached out to other organizations who would usually pick up a case like this. You talked to the ACLU and didn't hear back from them. Is there any other organizations? And what led to the decision for you guys to just decide to fund this yourself?
Well, ultimately, we were resigned to the fact that we might have to fund this on our own anyway. So we were prepared to do that. We were prepared to do that kind of fundraising, but we really were hoping for pro bono support. But I really don't know why we didn't get support from NARAL. We didn't get support from the ACLU. I'm glad some of the press has really picked up on the fact that the ACLU decided not to reply to us at all. And I would really be curious to know what their logic is. I really thought the ACLU would. They usually don't judge an organization by whether they want to be affiliated with them or not.
If there was one organization I thought would pick up on this, it would be the ACLU. I mean, I do not understand this. It's unconscionable.
I don't understand it either, and I was hoping some of the journalists I was talking to might be able to get a better answer from them on this. But the fact of the matter was, is we were talking to a representative from the ACLU. We had a very limited window of time in which we could file this lawsuit. We needed to be able to file that lawsuit immediately after her exemption form was denied. So we were scrambling to dig up a lawyer, and then we were talking to a guy from the ACLU one Friday, and he said he was going to be working on this whole thing over the weekend. He was very excited about it. And then when the next week came, he claimed to be, you know, we were calling his office, and it was claimed that he was in meetings pretty much 24 hours a day. We never heard back from him again. So there had to be some kind of dictate somewhere that we not be spoken to or about.
Wow.
A little bit of echoes of Referendum 74 on us in there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we kind of went through that ourselves. So, I just kind of hung up on this. Are there any other groups? Like, I know there's the Epignani Humanist Legal Center that usually does work like this. Is there any other groups that you've reached out to or maybe have heard from?
Maybe even some local groups?
No, not so far. We haven't heard from anybody, but now maybe people feel like we're locked into the legal representation we have. And really, the lawyer we do have, James McNaughton, he's a New Jersey lawyer who somehow got permission from the court to represent us in Missouri. He's actually really quite excited about this and really really feels we have a strong case. He really did push for the federal filing, and he seems to really have a good feeling about that. But now we do have Andrew Seidel from the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Oh, exciting.
Reached out to me last week, and he offered that he would offer his insights and help wherever he could and offer to coordinate with our lawyer. And he's begun doing that already. They've begun talking about legal strategy since Missouri's motion to dismiss came in for the state filing, and they're considering tactic from that point on.
So the state level RFRA, that Religious Freedom Restoration Act, has been around for a little while. And you mentioned, hey, this is really the time, given the Hobby Lobby ruling at the Supreme Court level. Can you go into a little bit about why that Hobby Lobby ruling really sets the stage for someone from an atheistic worldview to establish their rights? Because so many people in the atheist community were very disappointed by that ruling.
Right. Well, you like to take something like this and to make lemonade, so to speak. There was a lot of a real lack of critical thinking, I think, in the Hobby Lobby ruling, and that's been expounded upon and from many commentators and press outlets and that kind of thing. But to look at that and ask where it gives us an advantage, it gives us an advantage in all the parts that made Hobby Lobby itself an outrage. Now, Hobby Lobby was federal level RFRA, but obviously the states want to put that in place to have even more robust exemptions, I think, for state-level deference to religious belief. And this is something where we're really going to force them to, you know, delineate where they're at with that. But, I mean, look at Hobby Lobby and then look at some of the arguments that might come up against the Satanic Temple. People always say, well, they're really going to call into question your sincerity. And at any time, did they ask Hobby Lobby to define what they meant by saying that this was part of their Christian belief? Did they justify it directly in any form of scripture? Did anybody even ask them how often they practice? You know, is it required that somebody put forward this idea of an exemption that they go to church weekly? What does it mean? You know, it was all really kind of taken at face value, and So it makes it really difficult to imagine how they're going to come at us and try to discredit our claim.
I think that's a point that we've made before on the show, is that the last thing in the world is we don't want the government to start deciding what sort of religious belief is sincere. I think they need to accept it all. They can't question that. Other than that, that just opens a terrible can of worms.
Right. And are they going to say at some point that, well, while our beliefs are deeply held, they're not religious because they don't call upon a supernatural power? And then you really have, the government explicitly stating that religion is dependent upon supernatural belief, and supernaturalism has a special privilege in society over rational thought or free inquiry in any other way. I mean, is that really a door they want to open? Is that somewhere they want to go?
Right.
And as a matter of fact, they might. And that's kind of a criticism we get, too, is that we'll force that hand. But the fact of the matter is, if we don't try to exercise these liberties in the name of keeping them, we've never had them at all.
Now, a lot of people, scholars, are saying that this argument has been made already. They're saying it's been done, it's been decided already. What makes this lawsuit different?
Oh, I think the change in the dialogue about religious liberty has significantly changed. The abortion restrictions are something new. Previously, people were arguing, I think, abortion in general. I'm really not sure. I'm not sure what some of the precedent cases were, but I think some of these cases they're referencing were pre-Roe v. Wade. And things like informed consent, these 72-hour, 24-hour waiting periods, depending on where you are, those are new kind of little weasel bills meant to dissuade people from abortion and make it more difficult to have them. And again, to go back to Hobby Lobby, Hobby Lobby really opened the door to far broader claims of religious exemption that really really now will put to the question how far can you go with your stated deeply held beliefs in bypassing state laws. And I think we have a much stronger case than Hobby Lobby does or did, in fact, because with the informed consent materials, it's very easy to demonstrate that the state itself is putting forward a religious point of view that is in conflict with our own. And it's very difficult for them to argue that. Are we actually going to see right-wing evangelical Christians claiming that religion has no place in the question of whether or not life begins at conception? I'd love to see any of them on record saying that. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that would happen in this kind of climate. Now, clearly, one great outcome from this lawsuit would be that people of certain faiths are permitted to use waivers to exempt themselves from these ridiculous waiting periods, from these religiously motivated informed consent materials, the propagandistic materials that you mentioned. But is there a possibility that this lawsuit could result in an outcome where these materials and the waiting period would be eliminated statewide?
We just can't predict. I mean, there could always be a grossly unjust outcome to whatever we do. You know, all we can do is just put forward our best argument and hope that the judges really follow the way of the law, you know, That might be asking too much in a lot of cases, especially if you see what happened to us in Florida. A woman destroyed our holiday display.
Mm-hmm. We covered that one closely.
Yeah, and the state just dropped charges against her because they said it wasn't apparent that she had destroyed the display. She was just she merely moved it, you know, and actually she was trying to take it out of the Capitol Rotunda entirely. I made the argument later on. Well, then they've opened the door to any types of misbehavior within the Capitol Rotunda so long as there's not monetary damage done, such as putting potted plants in front of the doorways, hanging the paintings upside down, you know, turning over the garbage bins, whatever else. It wouldn't have been acceptable in any other circumstance other than tearing down a satanic display. So there is that fear of the negative outcome and the backlash, but as I said, I don't think that can stop us. I don't think those are sufficient grounds to keep us from exercising what we see as our liberty, because if we don't, we've never had those liberties to begin with.
This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to head into a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars? All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal! Here you go!
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@AskAnAtheist.tv.
Gateway to Reason's inaugural conference is July 31st to August 2nd at Washington University in St. Louis. Three-day tickets are just $35. Come see 23 popular speakers, including
Brother Sam Singleton,
Teresa McBain,
Aaron Raw,
Phil Ferguson,
Tracy Harris,
Rebecca Vitzman,
Dan Barker,
Steve Hill,
Sarah Moorhead,
Matt Dillahunty,
Hemant Mehta,
David Smalley,
and Vicky Garrison.
Tickets for a Friday night VIP event with our speakers are $125. Get tickets at gatewaytoreason.com and get gear at evolvefish.com. Follow Gateway to Reason on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And now we return to our conversation with Lucian Greaves, founder of the Satanic Temple, about his activism for the separation of church and state.
Well, and that's on a larger scale, when we open up just from this lawsuit, there is, it seems that whenever there is a law passed or a decision made that expands religious liberty and says that religions get to do this and that, you're always close behind saying, we're a religion, that means we get to do that. And I've even been heard it termed Lucian's Law. So what does it feel like to have this concept named after you? And because I absolutely love that you're there doing that to sort of show people, when you open this door, we all get to come through too.
Yeah, it's a message we keep trying to hammer home, and I really hope Lucian's Law makes it into the law dictionaries to the point where these little municipalities put forward these idiotic notions that they must have a Ten Commandments monument standing, or they must have In God We Trust plaques within the city hall or things like that, that it doesn't take very long before somebody starts thinking that the Satanists can't be far behind. Some people are starting to catch on. You do see that dialogue happening in some places, but they're still remarkably slow to see it. You know, there's still this kind of ingrained notion that religion in the United States means Christianity, and these exemptions are for one group only. And there's a good deal of revisionist history that I think some of these witless politicians we have actually do subscribe to genuinely, that does not recognize that we are a pluralistic nation and that we're built upon many different beliefs and backgrounds of cultures.
Now, I'd like to ask a question on along the lines of a religious exemption waiver, and it seems to be kind of the opposite situation that you're facing right here. And that's in the cases of things like vaccinating your children and allowing children who are unvaccinated to attend public school functions and public schools in general. Many people will ask for a personal exemption or a religious exemption from vaccinating their children under the guise of religious freedom. And for people that do not subscribe to supernaturalist worldview, that is very troubling, because we understand the science behind herd immunity, vaccination, and it would be very troubling to permit lots and lots of people to have a waiver to exempt themselves from that for the safety of the public good. How is this kind of waiver different?
Well, this the type of waiver we're using is personal, and it's somebody's own personal choice, and arguably it hurts nobody but her. I am disgusted by the anti-vaccination movement. I'm disgusted by the thick-skulled pig-headedness of these people who refuse to understand that a certain peer-reviewed paper was rejected after the fact because the evidence didn't stack up, not because there's a large ongoing conspiracy to keep us beholden to the Illuminati or Satanists or whatever else. You know, the idea is that you have the right to make those choices about your own body, but if you're going to say that that then you have the choice to not be vaccinated, you're putting other people's bodily autonomy at risk, and I don't think that's tolerable.
It's a good point. It's a good distinction. I also wonder if it can set a precedent in which, you know, other laws, like any religion can write a waiver, any church could write a waiver to say, you know, I don't want to follow speeding laws or something like that. So
right.
I think it's a good decision.
I think if you look at what we're doing and the way people are going to have to question what we're doing and draw the line, I don't think overall that the activities of the Satanic Temple are actually going to cause for a more general expansion of religious liberty. That will definitely happen if people like us don't take action.
Right.
What's going to happen is people are going to be forced to consider that these religious exemptions are open to any belief system, or they should be. And are we really willing to allow people to make up their own rules on this? So I think with our actions counteracting some of the standard notions of what the religious agenda is or should be, we're going to find that kind of reasonable plateau where you have certain lines drawn where people can accept that this is within the purview of religious opinion or a religious exemption, and this is not. It's really been spiraling out of control, I feel, in the last many decades, and now I think it takes something like this to rein it in.
I can't help but be reminded or think of the school voucher system in the state of Louisiana, where there were a great many legislators that were very much in favor of school vouchers because it would allow state money to be spent for children to attend religious schools. And that was all fine and dandy until a legislator heard about, well, there could be a voucher that could be used to send a child to a school that taught from a Muslim orientation, right, from a Muslim worldview. And he said, well, we can't use state funds to fund that at all, and sort of causes that pull back, that push and pull of saying, you know what, this is a consequence that we didn't think of, and that's not what we intended. And so you have to pull back a little bit on that. And I think, is that what you're kind of going for in this case?
Yeah. I really think, well, that kind of circumspect reaction, I think, is very good. When they're putting forward something and they're really only conceiving of it benefiting their own tribal interests, I think that's not only wrong from a legal constitutional perspective, it's disgusting, really, to know that we have politicians who do that. We have so many now. We really have a rampant problem of deeply religious evangelical politicians really trying to cater to that base and using their position of authority to do nothing more than to advertise their religious belief and backgrounds, and at the expense of so many other issues they could be taking off.
Right.
You know, so it's funny to see them dissemble and get beat right in the face, especially if I debate them, you know, on basic issues, because they love to try to pretend they have the constitutional high ground, and they don't. That's another thing that makes this so enticing and so much fun. You know, when you start arguing against these right-wing evangelical patriots, and they're so clearly on the wrong side of the spirit of the Constitution, if not the text itself, it really causes certain heads to spin. And it's also funny to see on some of the more right-wing news outlets actually seeing within their comments people of the libertarian right-wing perspective actually agreeing with what they're saying. It's causing a great deal of confusion, and I think the confusion is very good.
Right. So there was a story where that you were involved in, we were following last year, I think it was, and that is the proposal to erect a statue of Baphomet on the Oklahoma City or Oklahoma State Capitol grounds. We haven't heard anything, any updates in that in a while. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Oh, yes. Well, you're in luck. We're doing an unveiling ceremony of the completed monument.
Really?
In Detroit, July 25th. If you check our social media or website, we have links to that event. It's at a place called Burt's Warehouse Theater. And so we're going to have entertainment there. We're going to have a ceremonious unveiling of this monument. And sometime shortly before that unveiling event, we will file our lawsuit against Oklahoma urging to allow us to place the monument next to the Ten Commandments monument on the state capitol grounds. And this was an idea that floated out some time ago, and then we needed to actually have an artist put together the monument, raise those kinds of funds, put it all together. And I'm at this point, Oklahoma has handled this thing so poorly that I feel very good about the odds of our lawsuit. Oklahoma, we filed a Freedom of Information Act request for documents related to our request when they failed to reply to our application. And I'm convinced that they did not send us all the documents. I am convinced that they did not comply with the Freedom of Information Act request. We sent another Freedom of Information Act request to the governor's office in Oklahoma. She outright failed to reply. She's not acknowledging the request. We even went through a third-party organization called Muckrock that specifically does Freedom of Information Act requests. Huh. They've said so many stupid things. Procedurally, they've done everything wrong. They've claimed there was a moratorium on new monuments after we submitted our satanic monument because really they didn't want to consider the question at all. But the moratorium was justified because there's an ACLU suit against the Ten Commandments. So they said that they need to resolve this issue first. Whereas we were going to put forward the argument that we didn't care, you know, we realized we might have to take our monument down anyway. But after the ACLU suit was dismissed, thrown out of court, pending appeal, Oklahoma didn't contact us anyway. And they also, we found now, had approved two other monuments through the legislature, and this time during their so-called moratorium. I can't imagine that any of this is going to look good in a federal court. I could see us not getting anywhere in a state court in Oklahoma. I mean, things are really questionable over there. But in a federal court, I can't imagine this isn't the makings of an outright scandal as to how the Oklahoma politicians have handled this. And I'm really looking forward to that one.
Statue unveiling lawsuits this week just keeps getting better and better and better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I think the revelations that will come forward from the Baphomet lawsuit, I think this would have been a historic case anyway, but I think it really has all the makings of quite a story.
Right. There's one other thing that I was kind of curious about, and that's you, actually. You, for a long time, you were completely hidden behind the pseudonym of Lucian Greaves, and you've recently sort of come out, and, you know, you mentioned earlier your real name's Doug Melzer, and there's been articles and interviews with you not as Lucian. Why did you choose to do that?
Well, I chose to do that because if I hadn't done that, somebody else would do it, and it would be one of those aha, we got them kind of things. You know,
yeah.
Pictures of me had gotten around, people recognized me, people knew. And so at that point, I agreed to do an interview where I kind of came out on my own terms. But, you know, if it were up to me, I would still be hidden behind a pseudonym, and I feel like it's really a desperate matter for me that this all be indicated and understood at this point, because I'm never going to be able to walk away from this. I don't come into this lightly. I know it's easy to see a lot of the humor from this, but it can be very stressful as well. When it first came out that it was me, there was no small number of people in my own personal circles that turned their backs on me because they didn't understand what was going on.
That's rough.
And it's not as though I'll be able to apply for a job anytime in the future, you know, do a career change without this coming up.
So,
you know, I'm quite locked into it now, for better or worse. But I tend to think for better, and I'm really proud of what we've done. No matter what happens, I'll be proud of what we've done.
I run with the show, I run into a little bit that too. I can't imagine you probably have it twice as much as I do at this point.
Yeah.
I think one of the really important things that we can all get behind, and you sort of mentioned it a little bit in the comments section when you said people that you didn't expect to be agreeing with you were agreeing, is that something really powerful can come of this for actual religious freedom. That once you say, hey, if you're going to exclude Satanists from exercising their religious freedom, who else could you possibly exclude? And I think there's something really valuable for people of faith in this and people of an atheistic worldview in any of the kinds of things that you're, the lawsuits that you're bringing, the things that you're promoting, separation of church and state really is extremely powerful for religious and for non-religious alike.
Yeah, and we do get messages, and they're not entirely uncommon, where people identify as Christian, and they say that just the same, they support what we're doing. You know, we definitely get a lot of hate mail, too, and petty little threats and that type of thing, but it's really moving to see people be able to look beyond the labels, which is something I hope this forces them to do, and say that they support what we're doing on the very ground that we're doing good work, and that it's an important message to maintain and uphold. And so I think the more this carries on too, and the more people come forward with that kind of thing, the more common it will be. And I think that, you know, that alone is worth doing. If you kind of, I think it would be great to take the outgroup label of Satanism away from people. You know, there's just this kind of floating out-group label that people were able to attribute all the evils in the world upon. And I think that when you do that, when you have that kind of thing available to you, that does more damage than anything else. There never were these kind of roving satanic cults murdering babies and putting them into mobile crematoriums. All the evil that was done during the satanic panic was done by people who truly believed that was happening and that they needed to purge our society of it.
Yeah.
Right. It's important to remember there are real victims of that. There are people who spent years in jail for basically fantasies, things that never happened.
Right. Accusations of Satanism, they were never a victimless crime.
No, never.
You know, as you can probably imagine, a lot of people that listen to our show would be interested in supporting this cause. Where can people go to donate?
Well, they can go to our website. We do have a button and icon where people can just donate to our general legal fund or donate to the Satanic Temple. But also, you know, if you want to get something better out of it, you can buy our merchandise too. All our merchandise sales, the profits all go back into these kinds of things. We have a lot of catching up to do if we actually want to make money from the Satanic Temple. So any purchase helps.
Lucian Greaves is spokesman for the Satanic Temple, and thank you for sticking with us a little bit longer. Thank you very much for your time. If you ever find yourself in the Seattle-Tacoma area, I'd love to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Since recording this interview last week, there have been some updates to the Baphomet situation in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Supreme Court has ordered the removal of the Ten Commandments monument on the state capitol grounds. In a 7-2 decision, the court ruled that the monument violated the state's constitutional ban on using public funds or property to benefit a specific denomination or religious system. After the decision, 6 state representatives called for the impeachment of the 7 justices who voted to remove the monument. The conservative representatives accused the court of playing politics and judicial bullying. We reached out to Lucian Greaves to get a response to this news. Here are excerpts from his statement. Given the court's ruling, the Satanic Temple no longer has any interest in pursuing placement of the Baphomet Monument on Oklahoma's Capitol grounds. The entire point of our effort was to offer a monument that would complement and contrast the Ten Commandments, reaffirming that we live in a nation that respects plurality, a nation that refuses to allow a single viewpoint to co-opt the power and authority of government institutions. This is the very essence of our explicitly secular constitution. Any one religious monument on public grounds is intolerable. However, once one is allowed, it is orders of magnitude better that many should be represented, rather than a single voice claim unique privilege. Unfortunately, our insistence that Baphomet only be displayed to complement and contrast a pre-existing public monument of religious signification doesn't limit our options nearly enough. Lucian's full statement can be read at AskAnAtheist.tv, and unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. I'd like to thank Dave Brulette, Becky Friedman, Donald Cerna, Bridget Lombardo. My name is Sam Mulvey. You can go to our website at AskAnAtheist.tv, leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842, email us at questions@AskAnAtheist.tv, contact us on Twitter at AskAnAtheistWA. Tune into our website later today for some internet extras. See you guys next week. And here we are. It's been a long time since we gave an interview most of the show like that.
It's the interviews that catch you off guard when we say, all right, we're going to have 10, 12 minutes, and then, wow,
yeah,
there's a lot here, and it's awesome.
Yeah, because with that one, I tell people, you know, oh, it's going to be a 20-minute interview, and then this goes on. It's like, wow, this is a lot of information and a lot to unpack. And so I just sort of let the 20 minutes go and say, this is going to be a 40-minute interview. We can do this in two segments. And then it ends up becoming kind of the show. But so, like I said, I did mention the trolling thing in the interview. And I kind of wonder at that. I guess trolling doesn't mean what I thought it meant anymore.
Internet,
yeah.
What is the archaic definition of trolling?
Well, there's usually a point to it. I mean, it's closer to pranking than it is to harassing. But I guess in modern times, it's, you know, with the invention of 4chan, it's become kind of just harassing, which is not fun.
Nope. And I think Lucian's got a good thing going when he says, you know, if you want to call it, people will call it trolling, people will call it pranksterism, but he's got a real thing that he's fighting for. And
yeah,
he's fiercely knowledgeable about the issues, and being able to utilize one particular image or perception, public perception, in order to accomplish a legitimate separation of church and state is very powerful.
Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, I would call it weird things on the show, and but the other thing is if you really want to get the idea of religious privilege in America, since we do have a Christian social substrate, get Satanists involved. And I think that's exactly I think that is exactly the tactic that they've had long before I ever said anything like it. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to having him on the show again. I would really like to do a little bit more in depth on the Satanic Panic, because when I did it in like season 3, it was like Mike Wernicke's kind of a jerk. It's just really just about this one guy who got it all started. We got some emails. So let's cover this email. This is a weird one we got up today. This is Zane from the internet who writes, hey, thanks for looking at my question. What is this that I'm hearing about Mecca being in the golden ratio spot on the earth? Could you please debunk this? Okay.
So we talked about a spot.
Yeah. The first thing I noticed is like a point usually doesn't have a ratio.
You have to define a ratio as, well,
some sort of some, relationship.
As a relationship between, well, in this case, it would have to be probably two distances. So you divide one distance by the other, and it comes out as this golden ratio number.
So that has been calculated and is known as phi.
Yes.
We should also say for our fourth segment today, we've got Donald on because he wasn't on our...
Oh, yeah. No, he was on the first bit and then on the last bit.
Oh, right. True.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So
sneaking in.
But the point itself, I mean... A number in relation to what? So we actually did a little bit of digging, you and I, Donald.
Yeah, we went and looked this up. We were curious about this.
So there's some folks, and they use latitude and longitude coordinates, and they've come up with some funny calculations. To me, it would make more sense if they were saying something like Sedona, Arizona is in the middle of an energy vortex, because a vortex is a single, like, you know, little point there. But, yeah, I mean, you can do some tricky math with latitude and longitude,
yeah,
and things like that.
So they wanted some relationship with multiples of either of the latitude and longitude of Mecca to come out as, when you divide it, you get phi just right off the bat. So they do this math where they do something like divide the longitude by phi and some multiple of the latitude. So in other words, they picked math that would give them the answer that they were already looking for to begin with. I mean, it's based off of this arbitrary coordinate system that was set up by the British Empire with the prime meridian running through Greenwich, England. So I was looking at this going, all right, how about if I take the prime meridian and I move it 80 degrees west? At this point, it's now moving through a point close to Washington, D.C. I do their same math without changing anything else, and now I get the new golden ratio point on the Earth is somewhere out in the Atlantic Ocean beyond the Pillars of Hercules. Atlantis is real. Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Well, that's sort of a weird thing is they're trying to make Mecca this, like, you know, in some sort of favored place, and their justification for it is that the zero meridian is a favored place, which is
I hardly think that people that are followers of the Quran believe that our cartographers and merchants in the British Empire were influenced by Allah.
Yeah, because they had the, you know, they kind of owned most of the planet at the time. That's why that's zero.
Yes.
So
it also happened that at the time the coordinate system was being set up, because you have to measure longitude in terms of time away from some zero point, at the time that this coordinate system was set up, the best timekeeping devices were being made in Greenwich, England, which is why it was the prime meridian and has stuck to this day.
Got it. Okay.
So hopefully, Zane, that's been debunked. I used to be a fan of funny numerology. You know, there's in the Jewish tradition, you have sort of the Kabbalists and the spiritualists that very, very much love their numerology. Every letter stands for a number. You mathematically add up all your things. Basically, I think the Talmudic scholars and the Kabbalists got together and made a BuzzFeed quiz for the Torah. You can make anything equal anything you want. And if you start with your notion that Mecca is the phi, let's throw a bunch of numbers in that will, through a series of operations, get us this phi number. So they could have probably easily picked elevation. They could have picked the alignment of something at one particular season mixed with a longitude. I mean, you just go searching for numbers. They're out there, and you perform enough little, you know, models and mathematical functions on them.
Well, it was like that.
Get there.
Some weird interval between earthquakes that people were doing, like in 2013, I think. They said, look, there's like there's an earthquake every 121 days or some junk like that. And the fact of the matter is, this kind of earthquakes happen on all of Earth all the time. And it's real easy to cherry pick data points to give you whatever chemtrail business you're looking for. I don't know. Numbers are fun. I mean, I like some of the weird things that people do as well. You know, and there is such a thing as recreational mathematics, which, you know, kind of the same thing, except nobody pretends that ghosts come out of the numbers.
No, it's in order to prove Atlantis. That's the true location. Yeah, we should start doing an unmanned sub underneath the Atlantic Ocean right there at that point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're a teacher. What the heck is this Charlie crap?
I'm apparently a very uncool, unhip teacher.
All right.
Don't ask me.
I can tell you if you really want to know.
Yeah, I'd like to know, because I keep hearing about it.
Okay, so it supposedly came out of Mexico as a way of, you're invoking this evil spirit and you're asking if Charlie's in the room. And what you're supposed to do is you take a piece of paper, divide it into quarters. So you write yes in the upper left, then no in the upper right. And then you write no in the lower left and yes in the lower right. And you take two pencils and you put them along the two lines that you've drawn to divide this paper into quarters. And once you have those balanced, you're supposed to ask, Charlie, are you there? And the pencil on top is supposed to move and point to either a yes or a no. And if it's a yes, then Charlie's in the room and you're in trouble.
So it's basically that Heydrich guy, that weird kung fu guy that James Randi debunked in like the 70s.
It's something like that. I mean,
or it's a low rent spectral wheel of fortune.
I'm thinking Mexican Ouija board.
Okay. I mean, the physics comes all from the way that the person balances that upper pencil or pen.
Sure.
And if it's properly balanced at exactly the center of gravity, it's not going to move at all. So you have an ambiguous answer to your nonsensical question. But if it's balanced off balance in some way, it'll shift and roll to either point to a yes or a no. But that's all there is to it.
Or if you're in a 100-year-old structure, you know, maybe your floor is wonky to begin with and
yeah,
everything slopes downward.
There's that too. If you have a slope, that'll also change it. But assuming you're completely level, then it all has to do with the way you balance that top pencil or pen.
Sam, I have no idea why you think I would know that.
But there are weirdos at schools.
There are.
True.
I did just come, though, most recently from my experience at Camp Quest, and we have all of our critical thinking skeptic kids, so I could imagine during our free choice time possibly debunking a Charlie.
And that could be fun.
There you go. So speaking of school, a former volleyball player is suing Delaware State University, claiming she lost her scholarship for objecting to her coach's proselytizing. Natalia Mendieta, a Catholic, asserts that her coach, Lakesia Killingsworth, required students to attend a Pentecostal church and even added church to the official team schedule. Killingsworth is also accused of requiring students to pray before games, handing out Bibles, and strongly encouraging students to join the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Mendieta was eventually cut from the team and subsequently lost her scholarship to the school.
This is a perfect example of how separation of church and state actually protects the faithful. It protects the faithful just as much as the godless. You know, there's so many people, we've got the plot of God's Not Dead 2 that has just been revealed.
Oh, and what is it?
The villain is, well, Melissa Joan Hart of Clarissa Explains It All is a teacher that reads the Bible verses in class and is sued by some, you know, terrible atheist upstart student. And the villain of all of these things are usually Freedom From Religion Foundation came and ruined everything. But here's a perfect example that a young woman who's a Catholic objected to having this particular flavor of religion, this evangelical Christianity, foisted upon her as a condition of her state-granted education. And as long as we can uphold the separation of church and state, this coach at this public university would not be making this a condition of her student, you know, of her athlete being a scholar there. It's separation of church and state protects the faithful as well as the non-religious.
Yeah, it was completely designed to protect people of any belief system, of any faith, or none, specifically because there is no established or preferred religious ideology. It's there to protect whether or not you're part of some religious majority or a religious or non-religious minority. It's for everyone's protection, but there are so many people that don't realize that.
Right. Well, and goes to the thing where the people think praying in schools is somehow illegal. It's not. That's not how it works.
Nope.
You can pray all you want in your school. It just cannot be condoned or led by any school administration.
But here's a situation where somebody's being pushed to attend a religion they're not a part of, and they lose their scholarship and they lose their access to education. That's illegal. But that's not religious liberty. Unless your idea of religious liberty is basically treating other humans as your slaves, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
try making that one work.
Yeah.
I actually have, before our final exam this year at the end of the school year, I have an hour and a half of the class period, and I say, any of the questions that have come up during the course of studying, now we've got 15 minutes, we can help resolve questions, any last minute things. What study groups, and I usually have a student ask a question and then elicit those answers or explanations from the other classmates in the room, right? And my students seem to like it. Well, during this thing, it's your 15 minutes before your final exam. What would you like to do? And two kids were like, we have to do a prayer circle. And I was like, you may. It's your 15 minutes. Just remember, I'm the one grading your test, and this is your opportunity to also clear up any confusion, just in case you wanted to, because I really wanted to be like, I didn't, but I wanted to be like, you can pray or you can literally ask me any question that will give you an answer for your test, which is most likely going to raise your grade. Which one? Choose wisely, child. But I didn't. I was like, of course, if you want, it's your 15 minutes. If you want to do a prayer circle for your final Spanish test, you can. I'm still going to be here. Over here, if anyone else wants to ask me questions. And we had two kids, more stunt-worthy than anything, at one side of the room, doing like an overly theatrical final exam prayer, and like four other kids being like, so Ms. Friedman, with this particular conjugation, does this how it works? Because, you know, like the irregular stem changing didn't really make sense, and I just wanted to make sure that I had a correct understanding. Like, sit with you guys. Yep, you totally cool understanding on this conjugation structure.
Knowledge. it's a good thing.
But Jesus isn't the one grading your test, sweetie. Like, that's what I want to say. Like, why? Pray to me. Hello. I mean, don't really pray to me.
Whoa. Hey, yeah, there's out of nowhere.
No.
Quickly.
That's what I'm not saying to my students, but the correlation between your prayers or you're getting your misunderstandings resolved. There's one of these things is not like the other.
All right, we're at about 17 or 18 minutes. I'm thinking I'm going to wrap it up.
Okay. You going to cut me saying pray to me? You're totally
no,
leaving
I'm leaving that in. Totally leaving that in.
Yep.
All right. See you guys next week.